This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 11th of October 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of October. And this week, the editors were Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Sheila Shepherd. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Bin Lorry Slams Into House, Harvest Weekend at the Cathedral, and Dementia-Friendly Aim for the National Trust. May we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Bin Lorry Slams Into House. And there's a picture of four work policemen standing round the back of a bin lorry, and the front of the bin lorry is demolishing the wall of a house. It really looks horrendous. A bin lorry crashed into two parked cars before ending up wedged into the front of a house while carrying out collections. Shocked residents found the Biffa waste vehicle lodged into a property in Drayton Street, Stanmore, shortly before 8:30 on Tuesday morning while children were walking to school. The lorry left the property with giant cracks and a big hole, as far as I can see, and structurally unsafe due to the damage, and came to rest across two driveways. Two cars were also damaged, as the large vehicle is believed to have rolled down the street and mounted the curb. It is understood that pedestrians had to take evasive action to avoid being hit. A resident of Drayton Street, who asked not to be named, said, "I was parked behind the lorry here. I let a refuse worker cross the road to put his bin on the back, and the reversing lights were on, but it wasn't making any noise, so I went round it. And the next minute it went down the hill and ended up into the house like that. It happened at 8:20 in the morning, so there was a lot of kids. A little girl was walking up the road. She was coming up as it was going in the house. Whether it was a brake failure or not, they said they'd do a check and find out. Police and fire service were called to the scene and a cordon was in place around the properties where damage had occurred. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said one crew from Winchester attended. A spokesman for the service said the dust cart went into a house, making both structurally unsafe. No one was trapped, so HFRS just made the scene safe. The incident was left in the command of police. Hampshire Constabulary said they were called at 8:25 on Tuesday morning to reports of the collision. At the time of going to press, no arrests had been made. Officers from both Biffa and the Winchester City Council were also in attendance. A recovery truck was called to assist with the removal of the vehicle after officers had carried out assessments of the property involved in the incident. The bin lorry had to be lifted from the house before it could be taken away from the scene. A spokeswoman for Biffa said, "We can confirm that there was an incident in Stanmore this morning involving one of our waste collection vehicles and a local resident's property. Fortunately, nobody was injured, and we are working to investigate how the incident happened." A Winchester City Council spokesperson said, "On Tuesday, October the 8th, there was an incident involving a refuse lorry in Drayton Street, Stanmore. No one was injured, and we are providing support to those affected. We are working closely with our contractor, Biffa, who will fully investigate the incident." The incident is the latest blow to strike Biffa, the City Council's waste collection service contractor. As previously reported at the start of October, residents were left without notification of changes to their bin collections. Over the summer, Winchester City Council was forced to apologise after Biffa caused a backlog of rubbish in several areas. Despite this, the local authority extended its contract with the national firm until October 2020.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Harvest Weekend at the Cathedral. The traditional harvest celebrations at Winchester Cathedral returned last weekend. As well as the traditional stalls from agricultural representatives from around the region, the newly styled Green Hampshire Harvest Weekend invited visitors to reflect upon the impact of climate change, how it is affecting us daily, and what we are doing within the local community to address it. It comes at the end of Winchester Green Week, a series of events around the district designed to increase awareness locally. New for this year was the Big Top Marquee, sponsored by Winchester University. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "Harvest Weekend is an ancient tradition in the church that is completely contemporary, celebrating agricultural and farming life and food production in our county today. We want to thank God and celebrate the harvest and also raise awareness."
And it's over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is Dementia-Friendly Aim for National Trust. The National Trust's Hinton Ampner House near Alresford and Mottisfont Abbey near Romsey are just two of the 500 historic properties which will undergo a programme to make them dementia-friendly. The Hampshire properties are to become part of an ambitious three-year project to unlock some of the nation's best-loved history and heritage for millions of people affected by dementia. In the first project of its kind, the Trust has joined forces with the Alzheimer's Society after figures revealed that 7%, about 150,000, of the National Trust supporters over the age of 65, including volunteers, staff and members, may be living with the condition. A Trust spokesman said, "For people with dementia and their carers, historic spaces, collections and stories can prompt and stimulate discussion and connection, encourage outdoor exploration and offer a vital connection to the world around them, with day trips recognised as one of the most likely and regular activities for people living with the condition and their carers. In comparison to other visitor attractions, people living with dementia also view heritage sites as safe and familiar spaces. Heritage, including visiting sites and participating in outdoor projects, has also been found to be one of the top activities of choice for those impacted by dementia in surveys and focus groups carried out by the Alzheimer's Society. Launched at the culmination of World Alzheimer's Month, this latest project will give the Trust's 9,000 staff and 65,000 volunteers the opportunity to join the Alzheimer's Society's 3 million dementia friends and learn more about how the Trust sites can be more welcoming to those affected by the condition, which can cause people to become worried, anxious or confused. Visitors can expect to see improvements at some properties, from improved signage, facilities and modifications to materials used on paths and car parks, to developing dementia services such as cafes, tours and social events. But the Trust will also be taking heritage to people with dementia at local care homes, hospitals, day centres and community groups, and leading the drive for more dementia-friendly communities by hosting awareness, raising activities and making improvements for those living with the disease. The Alzheimer's Society has announced that it is also publishing a new guide to help tourism businesses make themselves more dementia-friendly. And this is accompanied by a beautiful photo of the wonderful garden at Hinton Ampner, its tiered layers leading down to a ha-ha to keep the deer out, and wonderful cut, trimmed hedges of yew, and looking out into the very far distance, which could hopefully now be enjoyed by more people.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, editorial comment, question and answer, my Winchester, Belgarum diary, and letter from Westminster. And we'll end with items of general news. I'm going to start with the death notices. Butler, William James Jim Butler, peacefully aged 90. Cleary, Stephen Cleary, aged 80 years old. Darrow, Aileen Dallow, peacefully in hospital, aged 93. Jenkins, Cledwyn Watkin Jenkins. He's a retired GP of Winchester, died peacefully at the Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 86. Kennedy, Anne Pauline Kennedy, aged 83, and that was at Westacre Nursing Home. Maskell, Robert Ladd Maskell, peacefully at Brendon Care, Otterbourne Hill, aged 92. Rich, Werner Rich, peacefully aged 88. Rose, Kenneth Wingfield Rose, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, Winchester, aged 99. And finally, Sawley, Peggy Gladys nay Apps Sawley, peacefully aged 93. And I've got a little note here which says that Werner Rich was one of our listeners. We're going to have a Christian comment from Jane.
And Christian comment today, act of faith, comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is the priest in charge of St Faith's Parish in Winchester. When vicars go round to people's houses, they do like to show their family's best side. The story is told of one vicar who went for lunch with one of the families in his parish. When they got to the lunch table, the lady of the house turned to her 12-year-old son and said, "Johnny, why don't you pray?" Johnny, embarrassed, whispered, "I can't." "Oh, Johnny," the mother hissed, "just say what Daddy said at breakfast." Johnny closed his eyes, put his hand together and said, "Oh, Lord, why do we have to have these awful people over for lunch today?" Sometimes children do drop their parents in it. But equally, at times, children can do things which seem to adults startlingly courageous. On Sunday at St Cross, we celebrated St Faith's Day. October the 6th is the anniversary of her martyrdom in Agen in 300 AD. St Faith, or in French, Saint Foy, was around 13 when she was put to death. She had refused to deny her Christian faith and worship the pagan gods of Rome. It was partly Foy's youth which inspired later generations with her example of keeping the faith even at the cost of her life. At first sight, we might think the witness of saints like Saint Foy is not relevant to us. It's not likely that you or I will be killed for refusing to sacrifice to idols. But it is still true today that we are surrounded by things which are at risk of becoming idols. Youth and beauty, health and fitness, social status, wealth, success and family life. And if we refuse to worship these things, then the world will exact its price. Of course, neither youth nor health nor a secure place in social structures nor family life, nor indeed any of those things, is a bad thing in itself. At its best, each of these can serve not as an idol, but as an icon. In other words, in its proper place, it can serve to display God's glory. It is when these things take the place of God in our lives that they serve as idols. If they tempt us to put him second, to fit him in around the edge of those other gods, then they become tyrants to us. But they bring us not freedom, but slavery. Not life, but a kind of death. In an extreme situation, we may even, like Saint Foy, have to choose between one kind of death and another. We might think an adult could find the courage and faith to risk their life for what they know to be right, but a young teenager could not. But we might be wrong there. Father, keep all your people safe from physical and from spiritual danger. Bring us not into the time of trial. Deliver us from all which can do us harm. Make us strong in your strength and in the name of Jesus Christ our Lord.
Continuing with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are teen letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Stephen Miller writes, and the headline given to him is Confused. Sir, I am confused by the Lib Dems' approach to democracy. When we had a national vote on an issue, they campaigned for a second try. Who knows what would happen after that? Best of three, first to five, then they decided not even to have a second vote, but just to ignore it. The same pattern is developing locally. Questions by councillors to the administration have been moved to the end of council meeting instead of at the beginning. This was supposedly because the answers would be recorded and made available to the public. But this is not happening yet, so this logic does not make sense. In fact, when we got to the question at council last week, the Lib Dems voted to exclude this part from the meeting, so questions couldn't be asked, whether there was a recording or not. I'm starting to wonder if they only support democracy when they like the outcome. Perhaps it's time for a name change. Stephen Miller, City Councillor, Bishops Waltham and Durley Ward, Garfield Close, Bishops Waltham.
Mm. And Councillor Caroline Horrell writing about the same sort of thing. The headline is Accountability. Sir, residents of the Winchester District elect councillors of various parties to be your representatives at the City Council. The chance for opposition councillors to call the leadership to account takes place publicly at each council meeting when councillors have the chance to ask questions, receive a response from those in charge, and to ask a supplementary question if they are looking for further details. In an outrageous move demonstrating the lack of the new open and transparent approach of the elected Lib Dem administration, Councillor Kelsey Learney stopped the debate at the recent council meeting with the support of her party. It was a blatant act to remove the democratic rights of duly elected councillors and a sign of the true intentions of the Lib Dem council administration. Be assured, your opposition councillors will continue to represent your views. We will not be silenced. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative opposition, Woodman Lane, Sparsholt.
And Judith Martin writes, climate question. Sir, at the meeting last month about the station approach, the one that took place after outline planning consent had been given, one of the consultants mentioned in a throwaway line that the new offices would be air-conditioned. In fact, the deep plan building means they would also be artificially lit and generally high energy. The City Council is aiming for Grade A offices, which it assures us Winchester needs. The Building Owners and Managers Association says a Grade A building has, quote, high-quality standard finishes, state-of-the-art systems, exceptional accessibility, and a definite market presence. It goes on. Grade A buildings and offices tend to have raised floors, suspended ceilings, lifts, air conditioning, and other state-of-the-art features and facilities, and have been furnished to the highest specifications out there. This could mean mahogany finishes, imported tiles, marble and glass lobbies, and much more. The goal of the architecture and design of these types of office buildings is elegance, sophistication and luxury. Apart from the fact that raised floors and suspended ceilings are surely old hat in this wireless age, it would be hard to write a more environmentally unfriendly description, short of ensuring that the mahogany was guaranteedly sourced from rainforests with a particularly threatened population of great apes, and making sure the imported tiles come from as far away as possible, ideally by air freight. In June this year, the council issued a climate emergency declaration, and on October the 9th, too late for this edition of the Chronicle, a climate emergency action plan goes to the Health and Environmental Policy Committee. This proposes incorporating environmental measures in schemes now ongoing and refreshing the requirements that must be met before a planning application can be accepted to include a contribution to tackling climate change. Apologies. Happily, there are some environmental improvements proposed for the new leisure centre. But will the council adjust its own ongoing scheme and application for the station approach to meet its own climate emergency standards? And that was from Judith Martin of Romsey Road.
Vision in Danger, writes Kate McIntosh. Sir Bill Hode is spot on in pointing out that the setting of the Record Office was carefully designed and is integral to the enjoyment of its architecture. The concept of the light pavilion crowning a massive plinth reads particularly well for travellers exiting the station, especially in the evening, when the glazed pavilion is lit and shines across the birch copse. Any development of the scale and height of that to which Winchester City Council has given outline planning consent will totally block this view. Despite recent slight amendments, the proposal remains a gross overdevelopment. I further agree with his prediction that the proposed commercial outlets will probably be hard to let. The existing two businesses are within the station building, and I assume enjoy a low rental. This will not be the case with new build. The architect, Sir Colin Stansfield Smith, hoped the area under the Avenue of Trees to the north of the Record Office, where at present the County Council parks cars, street vendors would be permitted to trade. This would be a low-risk, low-price option and enliven the space. Compared with other cities in Hampshire, Winchester has great advantages in the quality of its townscape and buildings, to which the Record Office contributes greatly. At this, the threshold to the city. As our custodians of the heritage, our elected members should seek to build on the city's unique strengths, not compromise those riches already bestowed by such skilled forebears as Sir Colin. And this is written by Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
And Karen McCleary brings us back to the Lib Dems in a letter headed Indefensible. Sir, as Paula Ferguson attempts to defend the indefensible, Chronicle Letters, October the 3rd, that is, to argue that the Lib Dems would overturn the democratic decision of 17.4 million British people and revoke Article 50 if they win a majority at the next election, I would remind her of the late Sir Paddy Ashdown's words spoken on the day of the referendum. Sir Paddy, a leading Liberal Democrat, said, "I will forgive no one who does not accept the sovereign voice of the British people once it is spoken, whether by 1% or 20%. It obviously fell on deaf and undemocratic ears. Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And Hugh Lumbee writes, fence sitting. Sir, indecision, incompetence and disrespect for democracy are fast emerging as the key hallmarks of the new Lib Dem administration. Last week, we saw the debacle over the new bin contract, with many residents not informed of their new collection day until after the collection was due. The week before, we saw badly drafted and ill-considered constitutional changes rammed through council and proper scrutiny of the administration's work deliberately curtailed. The last edition of your publication saw a letter from Lib Dem councillor Paula Ferguson openly justifying the disregard of the outcome of a popular vote because her party didn't like the result, and to demonstrate the indecision and fence-sitting that so categorises her group, she and five of her colleagues abstained on a vote at the last council on station approach, an office development vital for the continued regeneration of the city. The sooner we get the back of this lot, the better." And that was from Hugh Lumbee, City Councillor, Upper Meon Valley Ward, High Street, Meonstoke.
And in the same vein, Peter Cargreave writes, anti-democratic. So here we go again with Remainers' pathetic accusations of leavers lying and cheating during the EU referendum. But we all know that is totally false, as all the doom and gloom forecast by the Remainers did not happen, and instead Britain has a thriving economy, full employment, and is the envy of all European countries. An example of the Remainers' hypocrisy is demonstrated in Paul Openshaw's letter to the Chronicle, when he blatantly accuses me of threatening civil unrest with horrific consequences when I did no such thing, as he must know. What I wrote was that civil unrest and horrific consequences could ensue. Perhaps he should learn to read before putting pen to paper. I find it very strange that he admits to being of a different political persuasion to myself. I am a Conservative, but is not prepared to state his political party. And one has to wonder why the local Liberal Democrats are so quiet on their policies. Is it because they are afraid to acknowledge that their party, under new leader Joe Swinson, is to campaign to cancel Brexit, knowing this would be a totally illiberal and anti-democratic act, and are too ashamed to admit it? Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And Terry Gould brings a more intellectual approach to things, says, seeking release. Excuse me. Sir, in the chaos that is the government in Westminster, perhaps the classics-loving Prime Minister should heed the writings of Herodotus, where he speaks of the unalterable law of history, that whoever elevates himself will be humbled, and advises not to be voracious, nor to jostle your way to the fore. Maintain moderation and humility, otherwise the chastising hand of fate will descend upon you. And in a similar vein, he talks of a small man immersing himself in smallness is only engulfed by it until finally he perishes. Perhaps time and history will release us from this current madness. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Roger Stevens writes, no deal a must. Sir, Mr. Stevens, Chronicle September the 26th, complains that Brexit has not been delivered. While our MPs wish to be seen to obey the will of the people, most of them feel sure that Brexit in any shape or form will damage our economy and, consequently, it will be hugely unpopular. Already the pound has dropped 20% and the Irish border issue threatens to reignite the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Nail bombs could be coming to Winchester. The fact that 16 million people voted to remain also weighs on MPs' thoughts. Hence the deadlock. Each MP wishes to be seen to vote for Brexit, but not the one that is eventually implemented. At this juncture, to remain in the EU would leave the Brexit issue festering indefinitely, and leaving with any deal would leave both sides dissatisfied. I have reluctantly come to the conclusion that we must leave with no deal. We have spent 3 years trying to explain to the Brexiteers how it will damage our economy, dismay our allies and fortify our enemies, all to no avail. It is clear that this lesson must be learnt the hard way. I deeply regret the cataclysm that will befall many who voted to remain, and that some of the Brexit's most odious promoters stand to make a fortune. It gives me no satisfaction to know that the Brexit-voting parts of the UK will suffer the most damage, while Remain London will emerge relatively unscathed. We like to imagine that only the tiniest tremors will shake Winchester, but who knows? On the positive side, Mr. Farage and his acolytes will lose their platform in Brussels, and his Brexit party will lose its raison d'etre. We have spent 3 years asking the Brexiteers how they will deal with all the issues that leaving the EU will raise and have been treated to a contemptuous silence. Starting on November the 1st, we can watch as the answers to these questions are extracted from them one by one. Our sojourn outside the EU may be brief or prolonged, but we will join again. And that was from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
I have no name for the writer of this letter. It's headed Road to Nowhere. Sir, Parliament and its attitude to the EU might perhaps be represented as the parliamentary mice having an endless debate while the Brussels cat weighs up an easy breakfast. That is not our moderation, as George Hayter would have us believe of Steve Brine, but rather of a person out of his depth, however well-meaning. In his memoir, David Cameron devotes most of his book to describing the disadvantages of the EU and the impossibility of reform. Only at the end does he flip, apparently on the grounds that do nothing is the easy option. The United Kingdom is not alone in its scepticism. The French referendum, too, voted against the Lisbon Treaty.
And Martin Holmes writes about the rule of law. Sir, it is both ridiculous and offensive to describe the EU as a dictatorship, Mr. Stevens' letter, September the 26th. To do so suggests a lack of understanding of the structure and workings of the EU and its goals and values. It also is also counterproductive to use such aggressively negative language to describe the bloc with which the UK conducts around half of its foreign trade. It is very much in the UK's interest, and that means all the citizens, to secure a withdrawal agreement that will form the basis for harmonious negotiations on mutually beneficial long-term economic trading and trading arrangements. This is something that is recognised by a majority of MPs, including our own. Leaving the EU was never going to be easy. Untangling 50 years of agreements on many issues is a formidable challenge. Despite this, and losing her majority in the 2017 general election, the previous Prime Minister put before the House of Commons a withdrawal agreement within 2 years of triggering Article 50. A significant number of MPs of her own party, plus the Democratic Unionists who had hitherto supported the government, voted against the deal. Is it surprising that only 6 months on, and with a new and inexperienced PM, who appears to share Mr. Stevens' loathing for the EU and use of inflammatory language, the UK government is still struggling to reach a revised agreement with the EU? The recent failures of the current minority government, which I would suggest have been the cause of concerns about abuses of our democratic system, have all been self-inflicted. But for the moment, we can take comfort in knowing that the twin foundations of our democracy, representative government exercised through Parliament's watchful oversight of the executive, and the rule of law, remain in place. Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And Stephen Godfrey writes, Bins Chaos. Sir, Councillor Linda Murphy is the Lib Dem City Councillor responsible for the shambolic introduction of the new curbside glass collection and revised collection rounds by our contractor. She has failed to ensure that residents were notified of the new scheme starting or of the changes to the days when bins are emptied. Despite having the glass collection boxes for nearly 6 months, many dozens of homes in my ward alone have yet to receive a box, despite the first collection being this week. Even city councillors have been kept in the dark about these important changes to the council services. All that residents expect from those councillors that run the city council is a bit of effort and attention to the detail. All that residents are receiving from Councillor Murphy and the Lib Dem administration is chaos and disinterest. And she also wants to stop free collection of garden waste. Councillor Murphy should spend less time campaigning in Eastleigh, where she wants to be MP, and more time doing the job that Winchester taxpayers are paying her for. And that was from Stephen Godfrey, City Councillor, Wanston and Mitchell Dever Ward, Downs Road, South Wanston.
I have another letter written by Seaman Lever on the bin chaos. It was obviously written before the incident involving the lorry and the house on Tuesday. Sir, apart from the waste collection team not missing one collection at our location in Badger Farm, the frontline operatives are often ignored. I made a point of going out and thanking them and, if appropriate, chatting briefly with the driver. The new trucks are a tremendous improvement. Refreshingly, a woman was part of the team. The council must act as an intermediary with BIFA. I am sure the key issues can be addressed and resolved, including the controversy over CCTV cameras. As for not advising residents about the change of collection dates, we only found out because a neighbour kindly informed us. Not everyone, especially the elderly, use websites. And what precedent would there have been to log on to the Winchester website to check on something that had not been announced? As suggested, and as a matter of urgency, talks must be initiated between BIFA and the council before the situation gets out of hand. Our refuse collectors seem to be caught in the middle, and both parties, BIFA and the council, must be able to meet in person, address and resolve the issues in a positive manner. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And Ewan Worthington writes also about recycling blow. And I take it, again, this is before the tragic accident of the house. Sir, Last week, we received details of our new bin collection dates just in time to react. We welcome the new curbside glass collection, which some other UK councils had initiated over a decade ago. But what troubles me is that along with details of the new glass collection dates was a leaflet outlining changes as to what Winchester City Council, WCC, will recycle. There has been a contraction in the items which we can now put in our green bins, although items of the same material are allowed. For example, they like aluminium drinks cans, but no aluminium foil, food trays or coat hangers, and are happy to have plastic drinks bottles, but not food packaging made of the same plastic compound. There are many other items, including drinks cartons and food packaging, which are stamped with the recycling symbol that WCC will not recycle. WCC are taking a step back in their efforts to save our planet from environmental destruction, while other countries and organisations are doing the reverse. The onus now falls on residents to take their own recyclable waste to the dump rather than have it done by WCC and their contractors. Despite less trips to the bottle bank, Hampshire's carbon footprint has just been forced to rise exponentially, boosted by the comment on the WCC pamphlet, "Please try and recycle as much as you can." Ewan Worthington from Stoke Charity.
And David Simmons writes, "All are losing. Sir, I think that Andrew Beadle, Chronicle Letters, September the 26th, has got it wrong. As I understand it, those in charge at the Conservative Association have no problem with Steve Brine being our Conservative Party MP and candidate should the whip be restored to him. On a wider level, nobody likes to see a stymied and non-active government. This is hardly a stand-up for democracy. Local publicity by the Lib Dems brag, we are winning. But in fact, right now, we are all losing." And that was from David Simmons, Sleepersdale Gardens, Winchester.
And Caroline Peter writes a letter which is headed, "Not a lightweight candidate. Sir, my heart went out to the patient James Anderson mentioned in his sorry tale of NHS experiences. But I must take him to task on his comment that there's nothing in other parties' MP hopefuls' background to suggest other than more lightweight. Paula Ferguson, one of the hopefuls, grew up in an ordinary family where every penny counted. Her dad was in the Merchant Navy, her mum a print worker. She got to university thanks to a lot of hard graft and work and a grant. Financial pressure stopped her pursuing a PhD. She went into corporate banking at Barclays and then worked for a data analyst company. Before joining Price Waterhouse as a management consultant. She has worked in the United Kingdom and Europe. She has passed banking exams in law, accountancy and economics. When she became a mum, she decided to retrain in order to juggle home and work and took a psychology degree and then a master's. For the last 10 years, she's been working in education, helping youngsters with numerical or other learning difficulties. Paula has lived in Winchester for around 20 years and seen all sides of life here. She is involved in many community groups, is an environmental campaigner and a long-standing volunteer at the Winchester Food Bank. As the Liberal Democrat prospective parliamentary candidate, Paula Ferguson is not from the party Mr. Anderson was hoping for, but I hope he will be reassured that she is no lightweight. Caroline Peters, Halls Farm Close, Hairstock, Winchester."
And here's a letter from Terence Butler that's really about good news. It's called "A New Target." "Sir, your leading article, Homeless Target for 2023, Chronicles September 26th, highlights the good work of Hampshire and Winchester councils working with voluntary sector partners to tackle this growing problem. Former Councillor Tate acknowledges the need to address the causes of homelessness, rough sleeping and begging, with its associated issues of poverty, loneliness, drug and alcohol addiction, criminal behaviour and mental illness. As chair of Emmaus Hampshire for 3 years, I've learned two important lessons. Firstly, the stereotype of homeless people bringing their fate down upon themselves and lacking the willpower to help themselves is invariably wrong. We have helped many men and women who have fallen on hard times, entering a downward spiral, often by losing their job and income, their home and partner or family, and not least their own confidence and self-respect. Frequently, they possess good occupational qualifications or have skills worth developing into employment opportunities, a major step forward. Secondly, successfully returning significant numbers to independent living requires a tailored and comprehensive program of support, including accommodation, work, skills development, health and psychological counselling, and positive companionship. Emmaus Hampshire does just that. Each year, we enable between a quarter and a third of our 32 residents, known as companions, to move to independent living and other older and more vulnerable companions into supported accommodation. We now have a new target. We are currently fundraising to increase the number of places for residents at our superstore by the recycling centre at Bar End, Winchester. Project 40 at 20 will see much of our storage space there converted into 8 additional rooms with all essential amenities. We have raised about 3/4 of the £280,000 required to carry out the work and now need that final push to get us over the line. Hampshire residents have long been remarkably generous in providing furniture, clothing, bric-a-brac and donations. If your readers would like to help, financial contributions, however small, can be made via our website emmaushampshire.co.org.uk. I'll say that again. Our website, Emmaus Hampshire, that's all one word, all lowercase, .org.uk. And that's from Terence Butler, CBE, MA, Chairman, Emmaus.
And this letter from Nick Ray refers to a photograph which was in last week's and this week's Chronicle of the artist's impression of the enormous station approach buildings, the offices and shops and homes. And in front of it, there is a young person on a bicycle cycling from the station direction into town very happily. And it's headed, Spotting the Cheerful Urban Cyclist. So, both of the artist impressions for the approved station approach scheme, Chronicle October the 3rd, feature the familiar Cheerful Urban Cyclist, a ubiquitous clip art character much beloved by architects in such imagineered 3D visions and planning models. Can I ask, once any such ideal cyclist leaves either picture frame, left or right, how will they proceed safely across town in any direction? And where might they lock their bicycle on arrival, assuming, of course, they arrive at their intended destination unscathed? And that was from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
John Miller writes, Death of Presenter. Sir, many of your readers and viewers will have been as saddened as I was by the death of Peter Sissons. I'm so glad that I managed to bring him to Winchester in 2012, when Ellen Simpson at the Tories office asked me to produce a week's celebration for the week Queen's Diamond Jubilee. We opened with an Any Questions panel on broadcasting. Peter was joined by Michael Grade, Martin Bell and Lindsay Hilsum. The mutual respect of this distinguished quartet stimulated one of the most fascinating discussions I have ever chaired. Peter had recently published his memoir, When One Door Closes, about his time reporting for ITN, Channel 4 News and BBC News. I recommend it to any of his admirers who have not yet read it, and especially to any of the younger generation who are contemplating a career in television news. Peter was a major figure in that world for 47 years, and we owe him a debt of gratitude. John Miller, Main Road, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. Now it's time for your say. The NHS has opened a clinic to help people with gaming addictions.
Right.
We asked people what they thought. Noel has the answers.
Yes, it's a bit odd because the first answer seems to be answering a different question. Anyway, Lucinda DeMora, 37, advertising agent of Winnall Manor Road, Winchester, said, Wow, that is insane. It's quite scary, but I guess the days of going outside in the forest are over. I don't know whether I've missed something. But anyway. To continue, Roy Gatsby, 79, retired property manager of Kingsworthy, said, I wonder whether it's a waste of money. I just can't understand the fixation. It's killed conversation. That's gambling he's talking about. Ian Sortwell, 46, an administrator of Worthy Road, Winchester, said, I play a few games myself, but there are kids who spend too much time online. There should be more awareness. And finally, Adam Duthie, or Duffy, 52, sales manager of Bishop Waltham, said, controlling screen time can be difficult, but it's how kids socialise. They shouldn't be hooked, but it's not all negative.
And we're going back through the mists of time to our dusty old files for historical news items, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was Friday, October the 7th, 1994. Two little items, or quite big items actually this time. First one, manual workers at Winchester City Council are frightened to speak about their future because of the privatisation threat to their jobs, a city councillor has claimed. Labour's Patrick Davies warned a full city council meeting on Wednesday that pressing ahead with moves to privatise the council's direct service organisations, DSOs, would shatter morale among the 155 of their staff affected. But Liberal Democrat, Tory and Independent councillors entered an overwhelming vote, 36-6, in favour of the externalisation process, claiming the current city councillor DSOs would face financial disaster if it tried to take on the huge cost-cutting private sector firms in tendering process. From opposing viewpoints, Labour and Tory councillors used the meeting to launch vociferous attacks on the squirming U-turns of the Liberal Democrat group for stopping an in-house council bid to win the DSO services, while supporting such a bid to keep council house management services run by city council employees. Liberal Democrats hit back by accusing their political opponents of being blinded by their respective party dogma. The decisions taken on Wednesday were regarded by many councillors as some of the most important taken by Winchester City Council for many years. And the second item, exceptional difficulty in recruiting children's nurses was given this week as the main reason for criticisms in a report on the children's ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. Winchester and Central Hampshire Community Health Council visited Northbrook Ward in May. They made a number of specific criticisms. Consulting rooms were small and cramped, while the three consultants shared a small office, but the asthma nurse had only a tray to contain her correspondence and no desk. Members felt confidentiality of patients was compromised with desks so close. The secretary's office was also cramped. One parent, with a child with cerebral palsy, said nurses did not seem to be trained in how to deal with cerebral palsy. She felt she could not leave her child alone when he was awake, as she had returned once to find him fitting and the nurses had not noticed. A mother whose child had been admitted via accident and emergency had a number of concerns, including that there was a lack of knowledge about painkillers and she felt nurses had been most unhelpful on day two. They had not helped her to take the child to the lavatory when asked.
It is going to take us back 50 years now.
To Saturday, October the 11th, 1969. Teachers from church schools and Sunday schools throughout the Winchester Diocese gathered in Winchester Cathedral on Saturday for a service of praise and dedication. They were taking part in a teachers' festival organised by Winchester Diocesan Council for Religious Education, which included an exhibition at the Guildhall. The cathedral service, which included simple hymns sung and enjoyed by children all over the world, was dominated by a procession of clergy and officials of the council. It was led by the crossbearer, Mr. D. Hocking, headmaster of the Church of England-aided primary school of Smannel. Taperers were Sunday school teachers Mr. Graham Austin and Mr. Ian Vosper, and the bearer of the Bible Diocese Advisor in Children's Work, Miss D. E. Willows. The next item has very modern sort of echoes. More policemen will have to be recruited if the morale of present members of the force is to be maintained, the Chief Constable of Hampshire, Mr. D. Osmond, said in Southampton on Monday. Explaining to a meeting of the Hampshire Police Authority why an increase in strength of 75 men was needed in 1970 to 1971, Mr. Osmond said it was not just a question of getting 75 men. The problem was to tackle the scale of wastage which had lost Hampshire 40 men with under 10 years' service since the beginning of the year. I want to see something done here which will reassure the force, he said, and warned of a creeping, insidious descent which was taking its toll on Hampshire's policemen. He added, 2 years ago, recruits were cut down to half of what we needed. There is no ray of hope at the end of the tunnel. That is what is undermining the chaps in their work. But if there were a suggestion that sooner or later there is going to be relief, then I think maybe we would not lose these men.
Back 100 years now, over to Noel.
Yes, Saturday, October the 11th, 1919. First item, the strike is over and we are left to lick our wounds and foot the bill. Some rash persons have estimated the cost to the nation of the 9 days' folly at £50 million. It is cheap at the price, for it has demonstrated, as nothing else could have done, several important truths. The first is that the British body politic is a healthy body and that the presence of a minute foreign substance has been eliminated without violence. It doesn't say what the strike was about or who was on strike. Anyway, the second item is the Bishop of Jamaica, who is on holiday in England, gave a lantern lecture at Trinity Parish Hall, Winchester, on Sunday evening. By a coincidence, manager of the West India Regiment from Jamaica at one of the Winchester camps attended the meeting and was a welcome surprise to the bishop, thus greeted it.
Jane's going to take us back 200 years.
And two very small items from 200 years ago, which was Monday, October the 11th, 1819. Firstly, four desperate villains who had long kept the neighbourhood in a state of alarm were a short time since apprehended through the vigilance of Mr. Node of Shawford, they previously having stolen property belonging to that gentleman in a considerable amount. And secondly, it would appear that some homeward-bound ship from the West Indies must have foundered at sea crossing the Atlantic Ocean about 2 months ago, as about that time the masters of the Colombo and Chapman transports observed a considerable number of puncheons of rum.
This week's first person is by Joanna Lewis, and Heather's going to read it.
Too many being lost. Growing up, I only knew of three people who took their lives, but vaguely. Such tragedies were never discussed in front of us children. We were protected. The subject was taboo. The respected local doctor, of whom no one realised anything was wrong, then jumped into the sea and was deliberately kept a mystery. Fast forward to 2019. In this year alone, I know three families locally who are grieving. The circumstances, age, gender, socioeconomic profiles are all different. But there's one shared feature. Parents organising a funeral for a son or daughter lost to a torment even the most loving mother or father could not prevent, or sometimes even spot. As the Chronicle recently reported, suicides in Hampshire are up 12% in the last 2 years. Numbers in Winchester actually doubled in 2018 compared to 2017. Nearly everybody reading this may know someone affected. I assumed what happened to a friend earlier this year was an exceptional story. But is it? She had more or less successfully managed multiple mental health challenges. However, she found herself facing a series of dramatic changes and shocks in rapid succession when in early retirement. The hardest was having to move from her home of nearly 20 years. Slowly, a vicious circle enveloped her, despite stellar support from her closest friends. Circumstances exacerbated her underlying issues, and her issues reduced her ability to be flexible in her responses. Social stigma increased her anxiety. Prescribed medication was hit and miss. High dosage side effects added to the complications, and the person we knew was being replaced by illness. Finally, she was let down by a disgraceful local suicide prevention policy. She knew she was at risk, so she responded as instructed. After hours of waiting into the early hours in A&E, she was told to go home and dispose of what she had purchased. 12 hours later, she killed herself. This narrative of decline was only pieced together afterwards. Could we have done more? Asked more? Common questions that left those left behind thinking about over and over. I still feel sad and inadequate to the situation. So the appointment of a suicide prevention manager by Hampshire County Council is good news. But this new post is for 12 months and shared with Southampton. Surely a task force is needed to deal with the problem and ease the pressure on the police and emergency services. We know young men are at the greatest risk. 1 in 5 men, according to a national study, have no close friends to confide in. It's brilliant that this Thursday, our heroic Winchester Samaritans and staff at Network Rail are joining forces at the railway station to mark World Mental Health Day. More resources should be made available so this exhibition can be rolled out. Meanwhile, further evidence of a Hampshire-wide neglect of mental health care keeps appearing. Last week, we learnt nearly 700 patients have been sent miles away for treatment over the last 3 years, costing an extra £20 million. We're even seeing cuts in support of the voluntary sector at the worst possible time. Social media is incubating mental health problems at a ferocious pace. It's increasing so-called intrusive thoughts that can become obsessive. Young people are exposed to horrible images, ideas, and people on their smartphones. Vivid negative pictures can lurk in the mind's recesses. If you are young and impressionable, they can reappear, suddenly popping up, interrupting concentration, creating anxiety. Yet Nick Bell of Winchester Youth Counselling has had to use this newspaper's letters page recently to ask for donations. Their funding had been cut to zero, despite working successfully on the front line for 15 years. High local rates of suicide are the darkest consequence of Hampshire's legacy of underfunding of mental health care.
Now it's time for editorial comment. So it's over to you, Noel.
Yes, the editorial comment headline is, "What on earth is going on with Biffa?" They say bad things come in threes. Biffa's service has, by all accounts, been appalling all year, a fact reported in this newspaper. Secondly, recently there has been the possibility of industrial action by the Biffa workers. There are complaints about understaffing, high turnover and sickness. Only last week the GMB union raised public concerns about health and safety of its members. And now a Biffa vehicle, one of the new ones that was supposed to have helped with efficiency, has smashed into a house in Stanmore on Tuesday morning. A family has lost their home, and a pedestrian could quite easily have been in the way of the runaway vehicle or been inside the house close to the impact. The City Council and the police will no doubt conduct their inquiries and take appropriate action if anyone is liable. But it's hard not to conclude from this latest incident that Biffa is simply not up to the task of running a bin collection service in Winchester. The contract with the City Council expires next year. Surely it must be time for someone else to be given a go. Could they do worse?
Got question and answer, my Winchester.
And this week it's Victoria Suffield, who is the owner of the Hambledon, the shop in the square, who lives in Worthy Road and tells us what she thinks of Winchester. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Well, Gurkha's Inn on the City Road for delicious Nepalese food and Winchester Coffee Roasters in Kingsworthy, which is the perfect end of a bike ride coffee stop on a Sunday morning. What is your favourite pub or bar? The Cabinet Rooms for a quiet drink, a chat and a good gin and tonic. And number 5 Bridge Street for a night out, and because Rob, who works at the Hambledon, DJs there. What is your favourite shop? Oh, I can't believe you're asking. Well, the Hambledon aside, P.G. Wells for knowing absolutely what they're doing and having an amazing kids section. What is your favourite building? Well, it would be mad not to say the cathedral, particularly as I look out on it every day. What is your favourite view? Looking over Hampshire from the top of Old Winchester Hill. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Living or dead? Well, Dave on the flower stall or King Alfred? What is Winchester's best kept secret? The cabinet room's teeny tiny cinema in the basement. What is the best thing about Winchester? The people. Cheesy, I know, but when we moved here in 2000, I did feel very at home immediately. And the worst? I'm not a big fan of the Brooks Centre, but it's such an easy target. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Commission a different architect for Barton Farm. It's such a huge development and should have been innovative and inspiring. And describe Winchester in a sentence. It's very beautiful, not really like a city at all. Small, familiar and knowable.
Heather is now going to read an alternative look at the news because it's Belgarum Diary.
What happened to the stone? Rummaging around the Oxfam bookshop on Parchment Street, Belgarum came across Hampshire by Telford Varley, who was the headmaster of Peter Simmons School when it was a grammar school at that time. Published in 1922, Hampshire was an analysis of the county, including its history, geology, topography, natural history, climate, agriculture, industry, and architecture. Lots of things of interest. Who knew that tobacco was grown in the county then? It commenced at Church Crookham in 1911, and by the time of the Great War, it was covering 90 acres. It also includes many interesting photographs taken around 100 years ago. One reads Sarston Stone at Shawford near Winchester, and it shows a huge stone on its side with a lady in a hat sitting at one end of it. It would be interesting to know if the sarsen is still there or if anyone knows what happened to it. Sarstons were sandstone rocks found on chalk. There are a couple of smaller examples in Abbey Gardens in Winchester city centre. This photo shows the rock next to what looks like a very muddy, cultivated field, possibly by the side of a road. Perhaps the rock was removed by the farmer to increase his area for crops, or maybe during a road widening scheme. Whatever, it would have taken an effort, as the rock must have weighed several tons.
Got a letter from Westminster, so over to you, Noel.
Yes, letter from Westminster this week is from George Hollingbury, MP. Despite all the headlines and a Supreme Court decision about the length and timing of Parliament's previous prorogation, I am pleased that it has happened again, because we do actually need a Queen's Speech. This last House of Commons session went on for 3 years, sat for in excess of 320 days, and it needed to end. It was the longest parliamentary session since the Civil War period in the 1640s and 1650s, when there was real turmoil in the country and an execution of a king. Not surprisingly, that one is called the Long Parliament, and it sat for 3,322 days. Now I'm more than happy to avoid any language that might be construed as inflammatory, so I will say that while Parliament certainly has a purpose around Brexit, it has become a little ineffective, because there was not a great deal for it to do, Brexit aside, due to the length of time it has been sitting. That's not to say that there was nothing going on that had merit. Last week, I sat on the green benches supporting the former Prime Minister Theresa May's domestic violence bill, an important piece of legislation. However, we had rather run out of legislative steam, and it's fair to say that there's plenty of things MPs could be debating and making laws on beside Brexit, and I think the public would like us to do so. That's what a Queen's Speech does. It sets out the government's legislative framework for a new session of Parliament. Now, you might think this government will not last, MPs will not vote for the speech, and there's going to be an general election anyway. And all this may be true, but what if there isn't an election? And if there's no Queen's speech setting out a legislative agenda of any kind, what will Parliament do while a general election isn't on the cards? This country is divided over Brexit, but there is often general consensus about many things that matter. For example, all parties want a well-funded NHS. They may disagree over how it is managed and how much money is allocated and where, but a bill about the NHS presented through a Queen's speech will be debated and amended in the House. Similarly, all parties agree that there is a need for infrastructure spending or tackling crime. The list can go on. I happen to think this Prime Minister has done a good deal to highlight the domestic agenda this country needs to address. Others, I'm sure, will disagree. But now there's going to be a Queen's speech, and there will be a framework available to Parliament where it can debate and amend all proposed laws and even compromise. Without one, there's little that can be done. That would have been bad for Parliament, bad for the country, and bad for democracy. Sir George Hollingbury, KCMG, MP for the Meon Valley.
Now, we've got What's On, and there's not a lot, I'm afraid. At the Theatre Royal, 14th to the 19th of October, with a Wednesday and Saturday matinee, we've got a thrilling comedy by Philip Meeks about Agatha Christie turning sleuth. It's called Murder, Margaret and Me. If you want to go or want for more details, the box office can be reached at theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or by telephone 01962 840 440. Now, there's going to be no lunchtime recital on Tuesday the 15th of October at Winchester Cathedral. This is because Winchester University is having degree ceremonies. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 11th of October at 7:21 a.m. and it begins at 6:22 p.m. On Wednesday the 16th of October, it ends at 7:30 a.m. and begins at 6:11 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. We're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And this is rather an important one for listeners to the Talking newspaper, which I will explain. Sun shines for annual marathon. The sun shone on runners, volunteers and supporters at the Clarendon Marathon between Salisbury and Winchester on Sunday, October the 6th. More than 1,000 runners and walkers pushed themselves through their respective races in the 21st Clarendon Marathon, with friends and family cheering them home as they crossed the finishing line at King's School, Winchester. While some ran the full 26.2 miles along the ancient Clarendon Way, linking the two cathedral cities, others took part in a half marathon or a 5-mile run. Andrew Hartley from Gatley Runners was the overall winner of the marathon with a time of 3 hours and 48 seconds. Meanwhile, the fastest female, Rebecca Vincent from Hatch Warren Runners, Basingstoke, clocked a time of 3 hours 27 minutes 24 seconds. The winner of the half marathon was Ben Pittman, who achieved a time of 1 hour 22 minutes 29, and Sarah Shedden, Winchester and District Athletics Club, was the first woman to finish the half marathon in a time of 1 hour 37 minutes 39. Speaking after the event, J.J. Heath-Caldwell, chairman of the organising committee, who also ran in the half marathon, said, "The weather was incredible, blue skies and sunshine. The weather forecast had been bad, but that slowly changed. It was very muddy in places because there had been a lot of rain in the last week. Once you have run through a few puddles, you get to quite enjoy it." JJ paid tribute to all the marshals and volunteers who had given their time freely to make the event a success. The marathon is organised by the Rotary Clubs of Winchester and Salisbury, and proceeds from entry fees is donated to good causes supported by the clubs. Many runners also raise funds for their own chosen charities. One of the runners, Stephen Such, said, "The greatest thing about the Clarendon for me is the amazing support from numerous marshals all along the route, and the views are amazing. The hill climbs can be tough, but the sight of runners streaming over them makes for a great spectacle." And I'm pleased to say that the Clarendon Marathon actually raises money for the Winchester Talking newspaper. So we had a stand there at Farley Mount, which was, I think, 7 miles from the finish line. And on the stand, there was water for all the runners running through, and most delicious homemade flapjack and bananas and salty pretzels for those in need of a bit of salt. And the runners going through were extremely grateful and a delight to be supporting. So thank you, Clarendon Marathon, for supporting the Winchester Talking newspaper.
Next item of general news is...
Have your say on fire services in Hampshire. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service is asking the public to have their say in an effort to make them safer. A new integrated risk management plan by the service will be shaped by public opinions and plan to lay out areas it plans to focus on over the next 5 years. It also hopes to reduce emergency incidents and save lives. The service has already been teaching STEER courses, which is an exercise regime run by firefighters to help older people to be happy, healthy and remain in their homes safely. It also aims to build confidence, reduce the risk of a fall and increases engagement in community activities. The new plan will focus on risks and how to best serve people, and also considers how population changes and climate will affect communities and the work they perform. It doesn't actually say how one can tell them what one thinks, I'm afraid, not on this item, but it seems to me really important that I mean, our readers might have things they really need to say to the fire service. I'll try and find out before next week's paper.
And this on the surface seems a rather unlikely item. Sight-impaired photo show. Winchester Mayor Eleanor Bell visited Winchester Discovery Centre to open a visually impaired photography exhibition put on by Losing My Sight UK, a sight loss charity based in Portsmouth, but providing a service to visually impaired communities across Hampshire. Below 2020 photography exhibition was an idea from Losing My Sight UK's founder, Dave Taylor, who runs the charity's Visually Impaired Photography Club. Dave says running the photography club has given our club members the confidence and ability to take photos and be proud of them no matter what other people think. Touring Below 2020 photography exhibition has exhibited in Basingstoke, Porchester, Portsmouth, Gosport. Ending in Winchester, all our exhibitions have been met with enthusiasm and support from the public, says Mr. Taylor. All the photographers have various degrees of sight loss. Carl Greterix and Corinne Hyten from Basingstoke, Andrew Fletcher and Dave Taylor from Portsmouth, Eleanor Summers from Porchester and Will Phillips from Fareham. Mr. Taylor said, next year the charity will have more funding from the National Lottery Awards for all, and we have new photographers on board. This year's exhibition were funded by Tesco Bags of Help, and we are very grateful to Tesco and their customers.
And now we have Pink Tractor leads the way over green message. A bright pink tractor led the way for green farmers to join the Extinction Rebellion in London. The painted tractor headed the farmer convoy across Hampshire on its way to the rebellion starting on Monday. XR farmers had been set up to join the call for government action in the face of climate emergency. They want to promote the green solutions that farming and land management can provide in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and boosting biodiversity. Many farmers are already moving towards regenerative, nature-friendly farming, working to enhance and create wildlife habitat and build resilience, but more needs to be done. Dagan James, buffalo farmer from Broughton near Stockbridge, said, "The changes that are needed have to come from government, and we are taking radical and peaceful action to demand that government acts. The science is clear. We are running out of time." Farmers and growers from across the country were joining the convoy to spread a positive farming message. They started from Broughton on Friday and made their way via Odiham, Sandhurst and Ascot, arriving in Westminster on Monday. "We are much more at home in the woods and fields than on the streets of London, but such is the gravity of the crisis that confronts us that we have no choice but to leave the farm and take to the streets to get our message heard," said Dagan. And this is accompanied by a photograph of four farmers, young farmers, about to join the journey to London with surrounded by hay bales, but with a wonderfully painted bright pink tractor.
And the next item of general news is going to be read by Heather.
Events to remember England's greatest king. The annual celebration of King Alfred the Great returns this month. For a long time, this anniversary has been commemorated by St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde. But since 2010, with the Hyde Abbey 900th anniversary celebrations, it's had a new form. To start the weekend, Hyde 900 welcomed Dr Catherine Welkirt, senior lecturer in history at Winchester University, to deliver this year's Hyde 900 King Alfred lecture. "The Descendants of the House of Wessex at War" is her chosen title, and she will look at a rather less well-known aspect of the Alfredian story, that of the significant role played by two of his granddaughters, an empress and a queen, as powerful political leaders at a time of crisis in mid-12th century England. A new and innovative audiovisual event follows on Friday evening when Winchester artist Sophie Cunningham Dawe and virtuoso clarinetist Emma Alexandra explore the colour of music in a new sound and light performance, ranging from Alfredian plain chant to Debussy. Displays in Hyde Parish Hall on Saturday include both finds from the popular community digs and the Golden Charter banners recently displayed outside the British Library. The Hyde 990 annual general meeting will be at 11 a.m, followed by a presentation on the Hyde Abbey Gateway. Hyde 900 chairman Steve Marper said, "While it now seems generally agreed the status of this important Hyde landmark, a surviving fragment of the Abbey, needs resolution, we are not aware that a specific scheme has yet been proposed. We are hoping that this discussion after the AGM might contribute to resolving the issue by, for example, revealing public views that might help inform future city and county council plans for the area." Saturday evening sees the final event in the Hyde Soldiers series, which has commemorated the role of Hyde in World War I. Hyde resident General Sir Tony Walker will again be guest speaker, reflecting this year on both the end of the First World War and how this sowed the seeds for World War II. The rest of the weekend programme includes two guided walks devised by Anna Withers, a talk and new play based on Hyde 900, research into the 18th and 19th century bridewell or prison which once stood in Hyde, and the King Alfred Day service in St Bartholomew's on Sunday morning. Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden will be in the garden on the Saturday and Sunday afternoons to explain more about it to visitors. And there is an opportunity to see one of the rare facsimiles of the Abbey's Liber Vitae, a record of members and friends of a monastery now held in Hyde.
And here's an unusually cheerful story. Welcoming students into the neighbourhood. The City Council has been giving a warm welcome to new students in Winchester, many of whom will live on the council estates of Stanmore and Winnall. The Welcome to the Neighbourhood project kicked into action last week with members of the council visiting 700 student properties across the city to offer advice on settling in and being good neighbours. The issue of antisocial behaviour from the scholars has been a problem for residents across the city. Students were also given welcome booklets that provide information on council tax, waste collections and fire safety. As part of the campaign, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service also fitted smoke alarms in properties. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "The campaign has been an excellent way to welcome new students to our community, keep them safe, and have a conversation about how people arriving into a new community can be good neighbours." And presumably asking the residents to be good neighbours as well. And there's a nice picture of 10 people, smiling people, both men and women, gathered around a big pink sign which says, "Hello, welcome to the neighbourhood." And also on the sign are "Hello, welcome, good day," all in lots of different languages. And there's one even in the middle of in Hebrew in the middle, but I don't know what that says.
I think I should follow that one with this one. Uni students in city hotels day. University students have been forced to start the academic year in a city centre hotel after construction delays prevented them moving into their apartment block. The Unilife accommodation at Sparkford House, directly opposite Winchester University in Sparkford Road, remains some way off completion. A total of 15 tenants of the 88 studio apartment block are currently staying in temporary accommodation while contractors work to finish the building. Apartments at Sparkford House, which was marketed to open in September this year for the start of the university semester, range from rents of £240 to £350 per week. A Unilife spokeswoman said, "We have been in regular contact with the students involved since we became first aware of the delay in July, working closely with each individual to find the most suitable solution to their situation. After liaising with the students concerned and understanding what their most important requirements were, we secured rooms at a top-rated hotel in the city centre, offering bed and breakfast and daily housekeeping. We're covering the cost of the hotel and will be crediting rent during the time students will spend at the hotel, which means that they are living rent-free whilst the development is completed. Construction had been on schedule, but despite the very best efforts of the building contractors, due to unforeseen issues, the site handover has been delayed." Unilife said some tenants decided not to proceed with their booking and found alternative accommodation after being informed of the issue in July. A revised completion date for the construction of Sparkford House has not been offered. "We recognise how important location is to our students, and this is the reason why we have secured the highest level of temporary accommodation available in the centre of Winchester," the spokeswoman added. Last month, Unilife submitted an application to Winchester City Council seeking permission to loosen the restriction on who can stay in the accommodation up until the start of the 2020-2021 academic year. A planning statement says the only suitable alternative occupants are university and Royal Hampshire County Hospital employees and young professionals looking for short-term lets before relocating to more permanent housing.
Partnered work for homeless. Improved partnerships are being utilised to support the vulnerable people in Winchester. As official estimates show, over the past 6 years, more than a dozen homeless people have died in the district. The Office of National Statistics figures show that an estimated 15 homeless people died in Winchester between 2013 and 2018, with one death in the area last year. The ONS counted anyone with no fixed abode at the time of their death, including rough sleepers and people living in night shelters or homeless hostels. Across England and Wales, 726 homeless people died in 2018, up 22% from the previous year and 51% more than in 2013. Michelle Price, the chief executive of Winchester Church's Night Centre, said anybody dying is a tragedy. "What we're all doing now is working really closely together. A new working partnership group with people like Hampshire County Council, Winchester City Council's housing team and Trinity Winchester, so we can deliver the best services and support we can to people sleeping rough. The overall thing we're working towards is trying to prevent anyone from becoming homeless. There are a lot of new things being done, and hopefully we can prevent it from happening at all. As previously reported, Winchester City Council leaders have set an ambitious target of putting an end to rough sleeping in the district by 2023. Despite a 1.8 million reduction in funding from Hampshire County Council, civic leaders backed a new homeless and rough sleeping strategy with a focus on early intervention and support, promoting system change through partnership arrangements and supplying more accommodation. Asked about the 2023 target, Ms. Price said, "It's certainly a wonderful aim to have. We would all love to end homelessness. It is a really difficult one to deliver. If we can achieve that, it would be fantastic, but a lot needs to happen for that to be the case." Winchester Church's night shelter supports around 100 people a year, and of those, around 60 to 65 become housed through the systems already in place. Today, well, October the 10th, was World Homeless Day, which was created to raise awareness of the global issue of homelessness. Volunteers and staff at the night shelter in Jewellery Street are holding an open morning from 10 a.m. to 1... Well, this was yesterday, sorry. So the fact that they had an open morning isn't really relevant to us.
Church's last service before transformation. St Paul's Church in Winchester celebrated its last service before closing its doors for refurbishment. The annual Harvest Festival was the last ceremony for up to a year at the City Centre Church in Fulford. A successful £850,000 fundraising appeal means that the building work now begins to modernise and transform the church into a community centre. The rector, Canon Peter Seal, told a packed congregation, "We are putting the church to bed as we move into the all-important construction stage of our Building for Life programme. From next week, we will be worshipping at 9:30 a.m. every Sunday at Weston, our church school. It is therefore very appropriate that the children are here with us today for Harvest Festival. The school choir will sing us out of this building as we prepare to move into theirs." Plastic sheeting around the organ was a reminder that change was already underway. Floorboards have been lifted and the Fareham-based building company Amiri Construction will arrive on site next week to begin the work. The last service ended with a prayer that the congregation would return stronger in faith, stronger together, and ready to build new life and ministry in this place. As some of the congregation left, a small group of people stayed on and began moving some 300 chairs into spare garages. Roof spaces were cleared and refilled with Bibles, hymn books, kitchen equipment and altar linen. Building work at the church is expected to last up to a year. The newly refurbished church will have new kitchen facilities, accessible toilets, underfloor heating and mezzanine community meeting space. Around 900 people visit the St Paul's site each week to worship, play, dance and pray. Canon Peter added, "This is an exciting and daunting time for us in equal measure. We really want to play our part in preserving the vibrant community feel in this part of Winchester. We want our buildings to be enjoyed and used more and to be a focal point for people living in Fulford and Wick. During the building work, all regular weekday activities will continue to take place on the site. The hugely popular preschool will continue to meet every morning and dance classes will carry on as usual. Changes over the next year will inevitably bring new challenges, but we are looking forward to building ever closer links with our church school, with the children and their families. We welcome everyone in this vibrant part of Winchester. Join with us in this new part of our faith journey." Chair of Governors at Western Church of England Primary School, Vicky Tibbetts, said, "As a Church of England school, we already enjoy a very close relationship with St Paul's, and we hope to build on this over the coming year. St Paul's is an amazingly friendly community and we are delighted to be hosting their weekly services."
And here we have From Perjury to Pulpit. He was jailed for 18 months for perjury and perverting the course of justice, so the Reverend Jonathan Aitken will have a unique perspective when he gives the sermon at the Law Sunday service in Winchester Cathedral. It is an annual event when the county's legal community, judges, barristers and solicitors gather for a special service this Sunday. Mr. Aitken was ordained last year, but is better known as the cabinet minister who sued the Guardian for libel, giving the infamous Sword of Truth speech. Asked for a comment, the Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, replied, "Law Sunday is an annual opportunity to gather with the judiciary and those in public office to pray for our judicial system and for those who administer it. This year we will be welcoming the Reverend Jonathan Aitken as a preacher. Jonathan Aitken, former Chief Secretary to the Treasury, was himself served a custodial sentence and was ordained into Christian ministry as a deacon in the Church of England in 2018. Everyone is welcome to attend the service at 11 o'clock on Sunday."
That concludes the extracts for the week ending the 11th of October 2019. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.